This is Scott Richmond.
And Arnie Sherman.
You're listening to What Do You Know on News Talk KGVO, AM 1290 and 98.3 FM. Arnie Sherman, a good Sunday morning to you.
Well, we have the perfect kind of guest for us today this week. We have Julia Anzano, who works on a number of high-tech kind of problems and issues for Cognizant, which has a outpost in Missoula, Montana. She's from Jersey City. She grew up in New Jersey, so you guys have a lot in common. And she's going to talk to us today a little bit about her life, which we always like to find out about. But she's also going to focus in on AI, which she has become automation and AI have become a not only a passion of hers, but it's what her doctoral thesis is on, and it's what the phalanx of the work that she does, of the practice that she's involved in, guiding companies to decide whether AI makes sense for them to implement, and what kind of AI, and what does it do, and how does it work, and you know, it's at the cutting edge of all business discussion. We're going to have a very interesting conversation with a Jersey angle to it about artificial intelligence and where we're at with it as a tool for business, trade, and commerce.
Can't wait, Arnie. Our guest when we return, it will be Julia Anzano, robotics automation consultant with Cognizant. Back after these words. Arnie, we are back with our guest, Julia Anzano. She is a robotics automation consultant. We're going to talk about AI, and she's from Cognizant.
Scott is very excited about the show today because you're both Jerseyites. Tell us a little bit about where you were born and how you got to this day today.
Yeah. Hi. Well, thank you, Scott and Arnie, so much for having me. Yes, I'm live from Jersey City. I am a born and raised Jersey girl. Grew up in a town called Mahwah, New Jersey. For those of you that don't know where that is, it's the last exit. I have a little bit about me. I grew up with a younger sister who is a lot older than me in many ways, and two amazing parents and Newfoundland dogs throughout my entire life. So,
and back up, where'd you go to school? Tell us about you have an interesting combination of academic experiences. I'd like to have you share that with our listeners.
Thank you. So for undergrad, I went to Florida State University. I kind of had an opportunity to go away because I could always come back home. So undergrad was retail merchandising and product development. And sophomore year to the end of my time there, I ran cross country and participated in a program called WILD, which was Women in Leadership Development, which really just kind of sunk my teeth into the leadership component. And then I continued on my education when I came back to Jersey, working in New York City, starting in the fashion industry at Coach for 6 years, where I also completed my master's in lean manufacturing and supply chain sustainability. And I really ran the gamut of design, color and concept, studio management, and product development, because I really wanted to understand the end-to-end process of product and consumer goods. And then from there, I transitioned into a PhD program in global leadership and change management at Pepperdine University, where I am in my last term.
Oh, my gosh. Wait a second, Arnie. This is a...
I knew you would find this intriguing, Scott.
Julia, first of all, it's quite impressive. Congratulations. That's just amazing work. The second question is, what did your folks do? And what did they do when you were growing up in Mahwah? Because you clearly had good role models.
Yeah. So, I mean, I definitely had a creative childhood. My parents really provided me and my sister with everything that we could possibly need and more to succeed. And it was kind of this just environment where you could do anything that you wanted to do. But I mean, within reason, right? Like, I think they created an environment for me and my sister to be to kind of just, they really believed in us. I think it's really important at a young age if you just have one person that believes in you. I also find that Arnie has done that for me as well. That would have to be a totally different, separate podcast.
Mentorship.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, imagine lots of glitter and Sunday instead of church, it was sports. So we were, I think I peaked in the 8th grade. I was doing everything from like morning announcements, plays. I don't
Did
know,
you go to
like
public school or did you go to private school?
I did public school. So public school route, that had its highs and lows, I think, just socially. But we prevailed doing all different kind of, I don't know. I think really we were involved in everything. We got to try everything.
And did
It
your
was a
folks
lot of,
work? Did your folks work?
So both of my parents work. My dad is in the glass and steel industry, and my mom is an accountant. So from a very early age, there was a lot of, hard work, and talking about different opportunities, and they were like leveraging their career. Very impressive. My mom was able to, work, and then also was a superwoman, somehow managed me and my sister and allowed us to do everything. I mean, she even sewed all of our Halloween costumes to make us have the most creative Halloween costumes. So, and then I had my dad where gifts were like CAD drawings being as wrapping paper. And so it was always just a very creative, fun environment, and early exposure to New York City. I remember at a really early age getting to go into New York and explore and see all the buildings that my dad helped work on and create. So yeah, possibility.
What was it like working for Coach?
It was amazing. I think one of my first internships where I got to do color management. So I was in a light box and I had to look at different colors and evaluate if they were within reason. And then coming back, my first job was creating color palettes and naming colors. So, I mean, it was so fun. It was an opportunity where I had a lot of, free rein and authority from this one woman that was my manager. She was fabulous. She did not want to hear about the project unless the building was on fire. She wanted to hear about it Thursday. She let me kind of come to creative problem solving to get to the answer, and then walked through why I did things the way I did. But being in a higher fashion environment, I got to sit where in the same row as the creative director. So unless you had a Coach bag, you had to put anything else underneath your desk. You had to, always look the part and just, yeah.
And you worked there when the parent company, when they were bought by Tapestry, that was.
Yeah, so that was really interesting to see the time of the parent company and sustainability, like corporate initiatives and goals, come into play. So during that time, I wanted to transition from the inception of design and color and really see how that was being brought to life. So I moved over to product development to see the end-to-end product. And then I had an opportunity to work with Tapestry's think tank, for the sustainability initiatives and actually implement or creative kind of come up with creative ways to implement sustainable solutions within Stuart Weitzman, Kate Spade, and Coach, all under the Tapestry umbrella.
Yeah, that's really impressive.
It's interesting you say you had to think of the names of colors. I just had to get some touch-up paint for my house and didn't know what the name of it was and did this, you had to go through the whole process. But the color's baked potato. Never heard of that as a color. I never thought of the place as baked potato, but that happens to be the color. The other thing you glossed over a little bit, which I think is important, you're going to school and working almost all this time. But you also ran track for Florida State University. I mean, you ran cross country. That must have
Yeah.
been a very competitive environment. I mean, FSU has a well-known and well thought of cross country team. And so what was
Yeah.
that experience like?
So I think I found that experience in my sophomore year, freshman year, you're new to all things and I'm away. And then I didn't want to join a sorority. At Florida State, it was like your grandma's grandma was in a certain sorority, and I just Didn't really feel like I fit the bill for that. So I remember the cross country coach, she was from New Jersey, and I got in touch with her and from Toms River, and she had the attitude, well, if you could do the mile in this time twice, you're on the team. And so I think I probably threw up after running the mile that fast twice. And then, I mean, there was, to be clear, there's girls there that are now have been in the like Olympic runners. They run for brand, like high-end brands. And so I was in the back just happy to participate. I wasn't necessarily traveling to compete, but I was with those that were. And so I really looked at it as an opportunity to put myself in some type of a community and
Right.
leverage those
But
resources.
you got on the cross country team without a scholarship. I mean, you weren't recruited to run cross country. You just hit the numbers right that she
Yeah,
gave you
I
and you
hit
got
the
on the
numbers.
team. That's
Yeah, and
impressive.
so thank you. Every morning was, you know, you were up at 5 a.m. and you were at the track, and then they put you in a van, and there's over 32 trails in Tallahassee, and so most people think of Florida State as a party school. And don't get me wrong, there were some days where I was getting back at 3 in the morning and then up at 5 in the morning, and I was going on the track, and I was still going and running it out, and it was wonderful. I mean, I think I got to fall in love with a city that I had no exposure to prior, and see, like, in the I mean, there was alligators on the trails, the sun was rising, and there was lakes, and it was beautiful.
So let me go again, jump back on this. You got your master's degree in a degree area that didn't exist when Scott and I went to school. Your master's, again, tell everybody, was in what?
Lean manufacturing and supply chain sustainability.
And what did you learn about all of that? Why did you decide to immerse yourself in that for your first graduate degree?
Yeah, so at the time I was commuting back from my parents' house after college, and I joke that I got my master's on the bus, because 4 hours some days on the bus and 8 minimum hours at work, I realized I'm not trying to do my homework when I get home. So how do I capitalize on those 4 hours? And I would write my papers and watch my asynchronous videos during that time. But really, I think that I wanted to understand the start to finish, from conception to commercialization, just the development of a product. And North Carolina State University had a program that uniquely fit what I was trying to do. I was trying to get my career off the ground and also still be educated academically. And they were able to provide an asynchronous program where I could work around my work schedule to learn. And I think through my exposure at Coach, I just wanted to really dive into how do you improve process, people, and product, and still deliver one of those three quality, a quality result without waste.
So now you're a coach, you have this degree, then you decide that's not enough
Yeah.
because you're an underachiever, and you decide you're going to go get a doctorate degree at Pepperdine again, and tell our listeners again with in what area.
Yeah, so the PhD program is in global leadership and change management. And then my dissertation research is in generative AI and supply chain management. Ironically, so this has been a, what, 10, 11-year development. My dad met a woman on a plane, Dr. June Schneider, who is affiliated with the program. And when I was an undergrad at FSU, I was like honing in on fashion. And her and I connected on LinkedIn after my dad and her met on a plane. And she told me about this program. And I thought, wow, global leadership and change. You could be that, you can apply that to everything. You're not stuck, right? And so
Right.
I think at that time, It was my interests were in around fashion. I didn't want to only be bucketed into one industry. And so I think whether I consciously or subconsciously realized it benefited me because leadership and change management are it's in everything, your personal life and your professional life. I then realized that's why I did a master's. I realized, okay, to get a PhD, you need to have a master's. And then how do I do that? And also work. And so then that started to make all my decisions to get to the point where I am now. And I'm in my final term of a 4-year program.
I was going to say, practically speaking, do you want to take the PhD and you want to teach, or do you want to stay in the private sector or working
No, I
for?
want to become a DJ. Oh, no, I'm
No,
kidding.
you don't.
Hey, wait a minute. I just saw in Vegas some guys getting 50,000 a night for being a DJ.
It's probably John Summit. I love him. But no, I think everyone's always like, I don't mean at you, but normally everyone's like, what do you want to do with this degree? I think because I have at almost done with it earlier in my career than most people embark on a PhD program. I think it's really something that's just shaped me at my core, and it's going to be applied in everything I do in my professional life and my personal life. And really, I'm doing what I like to do. I get to work with people every day and find creative solutions to problems that they have within their supply chain. And if I'm able to apply that with a tech solution, great. But if not, it's really about connecting others to better solutions.
Your thesis is on the hottest topic in business right now. I'm sure that was not coincidental, right? I mean, AI is, you can't look at a business website, you can't look at a newsletter, you can't look at a publication that's contemporary that isn't talking about the effects of AI or, what's happening with deep fakes or, all of the, pros and cons. People love it, they hate it, they're afraid of it, they're excited by it. And then you're working for Cognizant, which we have a small outpost in Missoula, as you know, but Cognizant employs over 350,000 people around the world, customizing business solutions for their clients. So let's leap forward and talk a little bit about what you do for businesses. What is your role? You talked about being, sort of a consultant. What are you hearing from businesses? What do they want? What do you have to prepare to help them with? And how do you make that all happen? How do you make that magic happen?
I was hired to be a supply chain expert and support on robotic automation solutions. But really, I work with different industries, primarily pharmaceutical, medical device, healthcare, and logistics clients that have different issues within their supply chain. And they have the buzzword bu budget around technology, which happens to be AI right now. And I am luckily tasked with being able to find creative solutions for them to implement. I do think that because of the buzzword budget, that lots of clients, they want to hop on, similarly to me hopping onto the topic within my dissertation, they want to implement AI.
Do they
But
even know what AI is,
what is
most of the clients?
right. So that's really what it is, right? They have the funds to invest in this tool or solution, but they're most likely not there yet. So it's really kind of taking a step back, and AI is a technology solution or tool that will improve a process, product, or similarly, like if you take it as like, let's say, robotic automation, or really anything that you're trying to improve a process on, you have to have historical data, and your historical data has to be clean for an algorithm to be able to feed off of that and improve a forecast or solve a problem. And so, if you don't have those foundational components in place, you're not going to have a successful AI solution.
So have these companies fought their way through all the noise about AI, because most of the stuff about AI is seeing, lifelike renditions of John, Beatles singing a new song, and you can't tell it's not the original Beatles, or some other huckster. I mean, I don't want to say it, it's sort of a hucksterization of what AI can do in the fridge.
Right.
That isn't what you're working with. That's not what they're interested in most of these cases. It is the application of a tool to existing systems to improve them. And maybe I don't understand, maybe Scott does from his previous work, but I'm not sure what AI does in a business sense that isn't done by other sorts of products or implementation of other things like a blockchain technology. I mean, that's not necessarily AI. I guess you could apply AI to a blockchain and do it, but you have all of these other tools out there. What does AI allow you to do that other tools don't?
It's not a one-stop shop. I think customization is probably one of the key words to this. So there's a few different types of AI. So generative AI, which is the AI most people are familiar with, whether they know it by that name or not, it creates content based on data such as text, images, and reports. And it's used for things like automated documentation, marketing content, or AI
Writing your
assist.
master's thesis.
Yeah, I would. And like AI assisted coding. So think of like any data entry or things that could have a high rate of human error. That would be great for generative AI. And then
And
the new
generative
buzz.
AI, let me just interrupt. I mean, most people would know that by the, the abundance of, traffic around ChatGPT, right?
Right.
I mean, that's where a
Yeah.
lot of people, you hear that all the time. Look, people are doing, predictions of Super Bowl on Chat, GPT. They're doing all that kind of stuff. I don't know how it applies, Scott, to the media world, but it just seems to be everywhere. And it's, I
It's
think,
everything.
it's everything. And again, I just want, fast forwarding just a little bit. This past week, you just went to Microsoft's conference on AI. How many people were there, and what was that like?
Yeah, so don't quote me on this, but I think a few thousand. I mean, there was 98 different sessions. So there was, it was broken out by keynote, workshops, discussions. And so if you were a developer and you had a certain use case for your organization, you could go to a booth and you could create a different like use case using like a preferred partner that they might have with Microsoft and create a specific like tool using Azure. Or if you wanted to more so be on like the security side of things, there was a, I think that's probably what the biggest or what most of the sessions that I went to were around privacy and security. Because for example, like Chat GPT, that it's like it's technically public, right? There's like open source and then there's private. And so I think right now, what I'm finding, especially with clients, is how do you have security and privacy around what you're doing and how you are working with a tool to ensure that whether it's in healthcare, that the clients that you're serving know or feel confident. It's like any relationship. You have relationships with people and you want to instill trust. And so I think the big conversation around the whole event was how do you create trust around AI? It's hard to do, but I think the more that organizations partner together and understand that this is a collaborative effort, we're testing things, we're piloting different solutions, we're not taking information that might infringe on our clients or be leaked or become an issue later down the road. And we're testing things that are in a safe space, sort of identifying what those things are, and then working through those solutions to build trust to then develop things that you can implement internally that focus more on maybe client specific.
Let's do a quick ID. Our guest is Julia Anzano. She is a robotics automation consultant with Cognizant. When the market is going so crazy over it, everyone just seems to feel to move in that direction, that or blockchain and crypto.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think actually it's a distraction. It's that I think is supporting
Talk
the
more
dis
about that.
Yeah, I think it's supporting the distrust in the tool. Because financially, you have organizations, funds that are tied to if AI is still hot, if it's successful, if it's talked about. So I think the buzz in the news is also then create, tying funds to this at a global level, and then it creates insecurity because why do people want to invest in something that might take a turn or take a tumble? My take on it is I don't think that AI should be, how do I say this? Like customer facing. So I think the low hanging fruit when AI started was if you are a frustrated customer and you're getting a phone or you're calling into a company to complain about something or get a resolution, and all of a sudden you're talking to a robot, you're pretty ticked off. You don't want to be
Right.
talking to a robot. So that reduces customer retention to that company that's now failed to serve you when you're supposed to have human interaction. I think the work that I do and what I feel passionate about is how do you utilize this tool on the back end to deliver quality to your consumer? So, forecasting, right? During the holidays, previously, if you have historical data that's going into an AI algorithm and you're able to feed an improved forecast to get your product on the shelf earlier than your competitor compared to when you weren't last year, your customer doesn't see any of that. All they see is that you were able to deliver the product that they needed at the time that they needed it. And so that is a successful use case of how AI can be used in a forecasting solution to improve a delivery to a client, not when they're frustrated on the phone and they want to be talking to a human. Just like any innovation, there's trial and error. You test a lot of things. And so unfortunately, it's been a very public innovation where
Definitely.
we've all been testing it out. And so I think through that is why there's a delay in trust and accuracy in the best ways that we can utilize this technology. And I still think we're still trying to figure it out.
That's a very important point because you don't sit around at the Center for Disease Control and watching them inject, mice with serum to see how this stuff works. You finally get a process that's gone through, it's been approved, it's been reviewed, it's been studied, and then you get the end product of it, which is sort of what you're talking about. So you were not, you know this stuff better than 99.9% of the people in the world, and you just go to the latest conference that has 90 plus sessions on all things related to, business practices and automation, data analytics, supply chain, cybersecurity. Was there any discussion about the social impact of all of this?
I think that the social impact is large, right? Like with everything that I think it was, I hats off to Microsoft, because I think that they addressed current events and what is in the news, and I think that is exactly how the development of this technology will be successful is by talking through the good, the bad, and the ugly. And I think that the way that they leveraged everything that recently went on with DeepSeek, they threaded it in a way that there is clearly an opportunity for anyone that works with them as a partner internally or even as a competitor to continue to refine their product and solutions for the outcome that will be better for like humankind, if for lack of a better word.
Right.
And so I think they really brought it back to like the human component, and how we're doing all of this to improve, and how their products are, the more that they're used, the better that they will be. And so even though they may have a way to utilize it, it won't get refined if it's not tried.
Well, it's interesting you mentioned DeepSeek. DeepSeek got all of this publicity. And when you drill down, it's a Chinese company that developed a faster way to bring AI products to the market without having to use NVIDIA and all these other companies whose stock value had gone up. And so the concern about it was more about the stock market side of things, not because, not that whether it was better, faster, more useful, more utilitarian. It was because it didn't use the existing, infrastructure that had been built up and was going to bypass it, which had, nothing to do with the client or the customer benefit. It all had to do with what's already been invested in other things that they weren't going to be able to, employ. It was basically a very political, kind of a turmoil rather than a business for business sake turmoil.
I think that is completely accurate. I think that, and then I think now in our political climate, the minute that you say anything involved with China, it's gonna blow up even
Right.
more. And then if the stock market is impacted, then, everyone is paying attention, whether they are benefiting or not. So I think it drew attention to something that's really not surprising. It's like any other innovation, right? There's someone who does it first and it's expensive. And then there's other people who try and capitalize on the high expense
Yeah.
or the rarity at the moment of, in this case, hardware or software.
Right.
And then really, I think it cut time in half by being able to use something that at a reduced
Right.
rate.
It had nothing to do with the Chinese. If this was a German innovation or an Israeli innovation or a South African innovation, people still would have pushed back on it because it was going to, there are people who have invested a lot of their life savings in like a NVIDIA and expected that to be their nest egg for the next 20 years because they thought it was going to be the engine and the fuel for AI, and then they find out, well, maybe it's not. You're absolutely right. The early people put a lot of money in. It's just like when people laid cable in order to do data transmission under the Atlantic and the Pacific, and then somebody just slapped threw up a bunch of satellites, and you don't need the cable anymore. Some of your client behavior fear driven. I mean, when you sit down with a new client that's coming in the door to Cognizant, and they're looking for consultative assistance is what they're coming in for. We got some money here. Our boss said we better do some AI, and I sound like Nate Bargatze. I don't know anything about it, but you got to have some AI. So they come in the door. What's the interaction like? How do you assess them? What do you say to them to find out, what you can do to help them?
I think that the most success has been found through transparency. So, fortunately, a lot of our clients we have had existing partnerships with, and success in, developing solutions for them, not related to AI, but related to a different technology solution. I think it's honesty. Really, there's maybe someone that has the budget to invest in AI, but they don't actually need AI at all. So that's where we come in and we do a proper assessment, and provide like road mapping. And if you want to at some point use AI, great, we'll help you find specific, specialized, customized use cases for that after you've built on your foundation or maybe like middle tier of where you are. Maybe you actually just need some more like robotic automation solution of some like a little bot to save down a single source of truth in a like an email attachment or a file. And then from there, once you have all of that in place for 3, 4 years, then we take all of those files that have the same information and we run that through, create an AI algorithm that can pull data for that. So I think it's just being honest and slowing down and taking a step back, and just yeah, continuing that relationship through. We're happy to create, like, collaborate and come up with creative solutions and brainstorm with you. But at the end of the day, that's not really what you need at the moment. So we will be very clear with you, like what is you need and then what's a nice to have.
You bring up a very interesting point. My professional career, consulting on, international business development and entering new markets, I'd say 75% of the time, a client that came in to see me that said, I want to go to China or I want to go to South Africa or whatever was a hot country at the moment, when you drill down, that wasn't the right place for them to go. They either weren't ready, they didn't understand the market, their product wasn't a good match for the market, there was too much competition, they didn't do an analysis. All that kind of stuff. And we would have to say, well, let's take a look. There's 200 countries out there you could go to. You've picked one of the 200. And I understand that there's a lot of buzz about that one country, but let's look where there are the best fits for you. And I think you're kind of saying the same thing about AI. I want AI, but you know, AI might not want you in the same way. You might not be ready for it. I was gonna say, you got 350,000 employees or maybe more at Cognizant. How do they all get up to speed on AI? They're not all going to the Pepperdine program, and they're not re haven't read your doctorate thesis yet, so how do they get up to speed?
Yeah, so I mean, within Cognizant, I feel extremely fortunate to be able to work for this organization. You really are the leader of your learning. I feel like I found my people. When I nerd out, I really find that everyone that I've had the pleasure of working with is extremely well educated, and that is, it's not just academically. I think everyone does their homework every day and puts themselves in positions where they set themselves up for success to constantly be informed on current events and training. So we have lots of training and different portals that are current. I mean, how I even went to the Microsoft event tour was through Cognizant Weekly. We're provided with newsletters and emails educating us on what we're doing, how we're contributing, let's say, to a current event, the current events that are happening, and then also opportunities that are available to us, whether that's in the form of a webinar, an in-person event, internally, with our partners. I mean, I could fill my whole day up with things on how to learn beyond doing my role.
For our listeners, give them a little bit of inside tip. What's the next big thing in the AI space that they ought to be paying attention to? What's the next wave of things that they ought to be, learning
Focused on.
about or keeping their eye out for?
So I think two things. There, well, security and governance, I think, is extremely important. I do think with the buzz of AI, it's either I find there's two organizations, either the organization that wants all of their governance in order and place, and they're delayed in even using this as a tool. And then there's other organizations that are like, let's think of governance last and just dive into it. And so then I think as at Cognizant as an organization, and then just me personally, what I think is most important, you have to marry the two. So how do you have some type of governance, security, ethical measures in place that are aligned with your culture? And also still proceed forward. And then a new buzzword is agentic AI. So I'll try to define it. So it's kind of a step beyond generative AI. So it doesn't just create, it executes. So it autonomously takes action, makes decisions, and it adapts based on feedback. So these are more like specific algorithms that are designed, let's say, like internally or private, like an HR algorithm. So it's a type of AI that explores how to automate supply chain, proactively improve customer service or different workflows, beyond just generating information.
Right.
Um,
So
so
this is
it
the part that people are nervous. Some people are nervous about.
yeah.
This type of AI makes decisions without having to consult a human being, correct? And it learns from its decisions and keeps going. And pretty soon you're plugged in the matrix and all the technology is running everything. I mean, that's the fear of, on one end of the spectrum, that this is going to be self-generating, self-nurturing, self-evolving, and it's going to be beyond the control of the people that created it. Is that a fear that you hear from companies?
I think that's a fear that I hear in conversations like we're having or just publicly. But I think from those that are coming to us have enough experience that they know that they are looking for an improved solution, more specifically in their supply chain, that they also know that they're contributing to it. So it's like an advanced calculator that's saving your information. So if you were, subtracting certain things over time, then it knows, let's say you're going to subtract that again. And so it's making that decision for you based on what you put in. So I think fear or like enjoying it, you just have to remember that you are contributing, right? It can't do any much without you. So if you're training it to make certain decisions, and then you're not happy with the decision it made, well, you're training it.
Well, some people are exposed to it already in many ways, and they don't even know it. For example, you go online in some portals and you say, best Chinese restaurant in Rhode Island. And the next thing you know, it's sending you information about the best Mexican restaurants, the best Italian restaurants, all those sorts of things based on your, the review of your, data analytics. I mean, that's what's happening.
Yeah, I think it's a funny thing, right? Like everyone loves it when it benefits them, but they don't like it when it doesn't. And I think some of it is going to be a reflection that of looking in the mirror that people maybe don't want to see, but it will help guide your future decision making with technology. I think that, I mean, there, you can look back at text messages and be like, I said that, right? I think people reduce the thought that they put into the things that they're doing. And I think it will force everyone, or it's forced me at least, to take a step back and be like, what am I actually trying to get out of this? And it's really kind of like anything else, like you get what you put into it. So if you put more thought in front of it, like as a preventative solution, if you think about it before you take action and how to tailor it to maybe have a more improved outcome, then that is what you'll get.
I'm finding that young people, certainly in my industry, in the media industry, are relying a ton on AI and, just advanced computing power. And just for the simplest of tasks, what type of computing power and energy does it take to run some of these businesses? I mean,
No, I don't know if I have metrics behind that, but I guess we're all kind of challenged. I think that you make a great point. It's kind of like, okay, so life as we know it, how things were functioning, now we could utilize AI to do existing functions, but it's not to do that and then go like slack off. The whole point of this advanced technology is to allow us to have more time to critically think. So I think where a lot of things were more data entry or tasks that now can get reduced significantly, I think we're still figuring that out and like what it means to different businesses, but I really do challenge people to take that opportunity of like, okay, yeah, it saved you time on doing this. But it saved you time on doing this. So now you have increased capacity to do critical thinking on a better way to work. And where we can't actually, like, where are areas you can't use AI to have the like human development or the human interaction? Like if you were doing a lot of data entry for a client and it limited your relationship with them, then you now take that time and you invest it back in the client with things that AI can't do. And that's just personal relationship development. And I think that that's the gap that's missing right now is, okay, now that you have all this time, like how do you enhance it to create something different or to just do better?
Well, it changes the nature of your job if half of your job is now handled by artificial intelligence. You still have a full-time job. So what do you do with that other time? It's not only up to the individual to figure it out, it's also up to the company. I mean, that's how
Right.
innovative companies grow and expand. That's how Apple, became what Apple became. That's how, Tesla decided they put automation in, and all of a sudden we're going to do SpaceX now. They had time to think about other applications of stuff, better or worse. So it's a twofold process. It's at the bottom level, the individual is trying to figure out, well, I got more time now. How am I going to improve my work, skills, my work outcome, my work products? And the company also has to know that with this additional time, there are other things that employees could be doing that are going to benefit, the objectives of the company.
And that's where I think upskilling is extremely important. Is now if you where that fell short, I think prior to being able to use AI internally and externally in organizations, now it's like that's where you invest, and I think that's where like employee retention will be at the rise for companies that are successfully doing it because they're using that as time to learn and train and upskill their existing employees that now have the time to actually invest in that type of development. And if you do it well, I think that's just going to strengthen your employee relationships. And if you don't do it well, I think you're going to go.
SOL.
Yeah,
Yeah,
exactly.
exactly. Yeah, you're selling shoelaces at the subway stop.
Exactly. Let's do this. Let's take a quick break. Our guest is Julia Anzano. She is the robotic automation consultant with Cognizant. Back after these words. Arnie, we are back with our guest, Julia Anzano.
So, Julia, now I'm going to come full circle back to the beginning. Your parents and your family life had a lot to do with the fertilization of your mind and your life. So, looking back, what's the thing that would stand out the most that you would share to our listeners about that experience, that formative experience?
Yeah, I think it's the power of one word. Growing up, my dad and I would say instead of having a good day, have a day that matters. So I think changing one word gives you the opportunity to have a more purposeful day, which leads to a more purposeful life. So if you start with one word and start with one day, you're able to change your life to be more improved.
There can't be a better lesson than that, Scott, can there? One word lesson.
I don't think there can be, actually. I'm going to use those words to live by.
Have a day that matters.
Have a day that matters. I listen, Julie, I believe in that too. You've been a delightful guest and so very impressed with all of your accomplishments.
Thank
Hey,
you so
Julia,
much.
thank you. You're great. We can just barely hang on, Scott and I, or me in particular. We're so, I like to say I'm so old that when I went to school, they didn't teach history. But I'm excited about someone like you who can grasp all of this stuff and make it matter. And that's what's important, I think. So thank you for being a guest today with us.
Thank you so much.
Okay, I'll see you next week, Arnie.
See you next week, Scott. Take care.
Thank you for listening to What Do You Know?
I can't wait for the next show, Scott.
I'm excited too, Arnie. If you'd like to suggest a guest, send me an email at scottrichman@townsquaremedia.com. We'll see you next week. And thanks for listening to News Talk KGVO.